Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program, I explore the latest in the evolution of consciousness that's taking place now on the planet, in our civilization, and how we are moving to a more cohesive unity of the collective consciousness. That's one way of putting it. And with that, there's so many people coming together in this year of 2012. I mean, this is the year where people say the shift hits the fan, where the shift happens, and where we are emerging into a new race of people. And with that, there's all these conferences happening. And one of the ones we're going to highlight tonight is the Pythagoras Conference. That's going to be happening in outside of Louisville, Kentucky, from October 10th to October 14th, 2012. It's actually going to be at the Horseshoe Southern Indiana Hotel and Casino. And one of the people who have been working very hard to put that together is on the phone with me, Lori Woodmansey. Hey, Lori, are you there?
I am here.
Thanks for being here. And I know what it is to put on a conference. It's a huge, huge headache. But
well, we refer to it as the wedding.
It is like a wedding. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah,
yes.
Send up invitations. You hope people.
Yeah, tempers flare at the end. We're all bridezillas. And yeah.
Right. It is like that. But this is a really great conference. And I'm happy to be connected with it in whatever way, even though I won't be speaking there this year. But I am happy that you are doing this conference. Actually, I've interviewed a lot of the people on the panel here, and somebody I really want to highlight is David Anderson, who's been a guest on this show. But before we get into that, why don't you just tell me about the concept? Sandra Sabatini is the founder of the conference, and she really put this together, and you've been working with her. So tell me, what was the idea behind the Pythagoras Conference?
Well, the idea that there's so much more to know out there. There's so much that is coming forward now, so many new paradigms, new connections. And we wanted to have a forum where people could come and learn all about that. Right now, we're so limited because most of that information is not necessarily considered mainstream. So in order for people to be able to learn in one forum in one place, we decided to put the conference together.
Right. So the theme of the – now why – I mean, I think Pythagoras was a great being, but why mm-hmm. why Pythagoras? Why – where does that come
from? Well, you know, I'll have to admit a little ignorance on that part because I think from what I can gather from it is that because Pythagoras was a man that thought in – almost in a different realm when it came to mathematics and scientific explorations for his time. And I believe that that's how this conference is in a way. A lot of the speakers can be compared to Pythagoras in a way that they also think in another realm, another, you know, sense of science and mathematics as well as spirituality.
Well, that's right, because actually that's what this whole show is about. It's about new realities, and it's exactly mm-hmm. so that's why I really feel in alignment to what you're doing. And like I was saying before, the person that I think is just incredible who will be there is David Anderson, or is he's doing a virtual?
He's doing virtual, yes.
And I have interviewed him for like mm-hmm. an hour and a half about his. David Anderson, if you've never heard of him, and you should go to my website, newrealities.com, to look at that interview, created a time warp generator. He is truly a time traveler, and he's
wow.
talking about that. And he's incredible. He's developed something. Maybe I'll play a little bit of his intro here.
Okay.
I wonder if you can hear it if I pull it up on YouTube. Let me see if do you hear that? Do you hear that?
I don't hear it.
Do you hear it, Seth? No. No. Okay, it's not coming through. I was just wondering if there was a way to pipe that through to the show. So what do you know about David Anderson? Tell me.
Well, I know that he is doing extensive work around time travel, and honestly, with him, I know not as much as I would like to.
Well, I'll
He's
tell you.
been kind of quiet. I've gotten to know quite a few of the other speakers, and but David is the, he's kind of a quiet person. He kind of keeps to himself. He's very careful
Right,
about,
right.
how he exposes himself.
Well, I'll tell you about him. Supposedly, he works for the Department of Defense, or in related, or related somehow to the Department of Defense, and he's built a device that can actually send. He doesn't say people. He's very guarded that way, but he says send things back in time or forward in time. And he says it's very easy to do that, to create a time warp generator. And supposedly he sent a plant back. He put a plant in there, or maybe he put some animals in there, but he went into the past. And do you know about the grandfather experiment?
No, I'm not aware of that one.
Well, that's
I haven't been big on the time travel
well,
type.
the time travel, theory is that if there is such a thing as time travel, and if you go back in time and for some reason you kill your father, your grandfather, will you be born? You know, that's
Oh.
a sort of a paradox of time travel. So will you be born? And
Interesting.
so he did something like that with a plant. I mean, supposedly, if you believe everything he says, and I think he's pretty legitimate. It's just so out there.
Seems to be. I
So
mean,
what
I would have a hard time believing that just because, there's a little skeptic in all of us.
Right.
But David Anderson is not somebody that I have, I can usually pick up on someone that might be blowing smoke, and he does not seem that way at all.
No, and I agree. He's totally professional and he has all the credentials and he's very scientific and he's a really nice guy. So he sent these plants back in time in his time machine. And then I think he killed the grandfather of the plant and of the ones he sent back. So if he sent that back in time, and he kills those grandfather plants, and those plants shouldn't really exist, if I'm getting the story right.
Okay.
But they did exist, and they came back to the present time, but the genetics of the plant was different.
Oh, interesting.
I know. So somewhere there was some, I think, some parallel split-off dimension that compensated for what happened in this dimension. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, actually, that's very, very interesting because if you killed off the grandfather of the plant, what, in order for the plant to have the full genetics, what took its place? How did it form that missing link?
Right. So it's some other parallel universe kind of was created for that plant to exist. That
Well,
create
yeah.
something like that. I mean, but yeah. So what were you saying?
Well, what I was thinking about when you were mentioning that, I thought, okay, if you took something like that to happen, in my belief, there would, because there is a grand scheme of everything. So if you did kill off the grandfather, there would still have to be something to take that place in order for it to be complete. So what genetics did it pick up on? If the grandfather plant was killed, what was the other plant? There had to be another in there. To me, there would need to be another genetic contributor.
Right, exactly. But it didn't, he couldn't tell what that contributor was. All he knew was the plant that arrived in the present
Was
time
different.
was different from the one he sent back. Yes, so I don't think he could trace that lineage back far enough, but it shows me that maybe the many worlds theory is correct, that there are universes splitting off all the time from this one, and maybe that we're just seeing this one, and this is the only one we think there is. That's sort of like a kind of Copernican, pre-Copernican idea, like, you know, the Earth is the center of the universe. Well, we think this dimension is the center of creation, and there's obviously more. But the other theory about this grandfather paradox is that if you go back in time, you kill your grandfather, you're not born, then you're not born, so you don't kill your grandfather, so your grandfather does live, or father, and there you are again. So it becomes like a loop. It becomes like a time loop in a way also. So there's a lot. And what Anderson also told me is that the wars of the future will be time wars. And time wars will be what I gathered from him, where you'll be able to change the course of someone's destiny with these time machines. And that is sort of what, I don't know, it's strange, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because I just wonder, well, you know, we've seen plenty of movies about what if that happened and how would that would affect future or past or whatnot. And it almost seems too confusing if I think about it, because I'm thinking about it the whole time you're talking. I'm thinking, well, what if they did kill my grandfather? Well, I would still, my soul would want to exist on Earth, so somehow there would have to be a replacement. So how does that, you know, but it would still change the dynamic of my relationships.
And the time, because I would, the universe itself. I mean,
yes, absolutely. Well, it's a ripple effect.
Right. So he says all these countries are in this time warp generator race to build the perfect time machine.
I can imagine.
My interview, he goes into it, and it's like, this is the technology of the future, you know. But, you know, just...
That's a little frightening, I think. I don't know. I'm kind of more worried about that than I would be a nuclear bomb, I guess.
Well, yeah, because they create a diversion to a different reality that kind of leaves people stranded or something. It's a big, it's a huge responsibility.
That's no kidding.
Far out that a lot of people in this field think that he is actually not so legitimate, because it's, I mean, these people coming to the conference are far out, but it's even too far out for some of the people at this conference, you know?
Well, you know, I can understand that, because one of the things I like about this conference is it is bringing people together that maybe wouldn't normally agree. I am always drawn to conferences that have more than one thought process, and yet they can still be together, because we can be so very unfriendly is the best word I can come up with.
Yeah.
When we're faced with a paradigm or a theory that doesn't agree with ours. But here at the conference, you know, they're going to be all, well, Dr. Anderson will be appearing virtually. However, the information is still going to be shared with others that may not be completely in alignment with what he believes, or, you know, and I believe our tendency is to always want to discredit someone if they're talking about something that's just too unrealistic for us, or out there.
But these are leaders. I really don't understand that, because the reason I do the show is to include everyone.
Absolutely.
And so everyone in this field, the field that we're in, are paradigm shifting people.
Mm-hmm.
There will be conflicts in the paradigm, but we can't throw anything out just because it doesn't agree with where we're coming from, because then we're recreating the world we came from, where, no, I don't believe you, you don't believe me.
Exactly.
I want to create a world where all these realities are accepted.
Absolutely. Oh, and I believe that that's why this Pythagoras conference is important. There are people that are all going to be there together, mm-hmm. that may not share the same beliefs about, you know, certain theories, but that it's okay. They're still going to be there. They're still going to share their information, and they're still going to hold space for everyone else.
Right. I should really be there. I love like doing this kind of stuff.
Well, that's what drew me to the conference. I was actually looking for something about exopolitics. I was really, really new to that thought process. When I saw it.
Have you been to Stephen Bassett's exopolitics conference?
No, here's the thing. I'm very new to this, Alan. Most people think, well, you don't have a lot of knowledge around all this theories. And I thought, you're right, I don't. But that was what drew me. I wanted to find out more. So I really don't. I am really green when it comes to that.
Oh, well, there's
that
are happening now and that I've been to. There's the Exopolitics Conference that Stephen Bassett used to do outside of Washington. Edgar Mitchell was there, and a lot of UFO people. Michael Sala. There's a big conference happening in L.A. I interviewed the guy last week called the Know Fest, which is about new knowledge. There's the Human Being Conference in I think that is in Northern California in April. There's the Mind Body Spirit Conferences. You know all that. There's a lot of stuff happening around the planet to bring people together. It just really, really is happening.
And it is.
And so it's very exciting for me. Oh, are you saying you're having technical difficulties?
I did. You know what? I was gone for a while. I don't know if you missed me, but it completely dropped me for a minute.
Oh,
And so I kind of came
interesting.
back.
But
I did my own time travel, Alan.
well, you may have because it felt like you were there the whole time. It really, really did. I had no idea that you were gone. But so that was, I mean, for me, David Anderson is really the person who really attracts me to this conference because, but everyone else is very exciting too. Like I mentioned to you, Chelsea Floor is an old friend of mine, and I did an interview with her. It's up on YouTube about sacred geometry and ancient civilizations. Haven't seen her in about 10 years. She'll be speaking there, and she's a brilliant mind. And then the guy who discovered the Bosnian pyramids.
He is one of my favorites. Yes, I cannot wait
And
to meet him. I did an interview with Sandra on her radio show with Dr. Osmanagic, and he has such an energy that it's so calm, and he knows so much. It's amazing. I'm very interested in these pyramids.
He is a real Indiana Jones type. I mean,
He kind of does look that way, isn't he?
he's
I
a
mean, the
Bosnian
pictures.
Indiana Jones. And for people who don't know about the Bosnian pyramid, this guy saw the side of this mountain that looked kind of square, a little man-made, but he started to dig underneath it and found there were tunnels and layers of rock that were obviously man-made because they were compacted rock. And then he found these series of tunnels that extend 2 miles out from this cliff, this mountain, and he just realized that the mountain is probably an artificial creation, which is 3 times the size of I think the Great Pyramid in Egypt. And he's uncovering that, and he's finding huge evidence that there's been an ancient civilization that created this, and they don't know who or where or why. And
Right.
he is a very interesting guy, but because he keeps discovering new things about that Bosnian pyramid, and in relationship to the whole theme, he's creating a new paradigm for civilization. Because if there was a civilization that could have built such a monument years ago, we have to reevaluate who we are in terms of what we think our history is all about.
Well, we've kind of strayed. You know, when he was talking about the pyramids, now, my understanding, as is most people, I believe, when you think of pyramids, we think of burial shrouds. We think of those being burials for people. But he was sharing about what he found underground, this pool of water, and the healing energy that was in this water and in this atmosphere was. Now, you've heard of the ionization of water.
Right.
Okay, and how healing that can be for our body and our energy body. This ionization in this lake that's in this pyramid underground, it has like 3 times that ionization. And he said that the healing that's under there, he's thinking that maybe it was even created for the purpose of healing. For people to go underground. He's still researching, but he thinks that maybe something happened to where people believe they may be driven underground and this would be where they would survive.
Or maybe it was part of a whole healing series temple complex that led to that pyramid. I mean, in a way, I mean, I don't think pyramids were built as funeral housing buildings, because the Great Pyramid in Egypt, which I've been in, was not created for that at all. They were created to house the energy. You know what pyramid means?
Actually, I'm not, I do not.
It comes from pyra, the Greek for fire, and median in the middle. So it really means fire in the middle, which means that these structures, these 51 degree angle structures, which a lot of pyramids are, create an intensity or a fire in the middle that preserves life. It amplifies life. It lifts life. So.
Well, it amplifies, from what I understand, energy. Now, I met a gentleman from Russia who he was a roommate of my son for a while, and he had this pyramid structure designed around in his bedroom over his bed. And I asked him why he had that. He says because it draws energy up. I want to bring more energy up to myself from the earth, from that that natural to help, from what I could understand, help him with prosperity, because he was describing how they use these pyramid structures in Siberia over the oil stations to produce more.
Right. So they were never used for burials of any sort. They were always designed, as far as my research, for these energetic amplifications.
Yes, and that's what I was not aware of that. And it never occurred to me because, again, that comes with the whole geometry and shapes and how they can create certain energetic creations that I was never aware of. I was of an old paradigm till probably within the last 5 years and had
Right.
no idea of any of this stuff.
So the Great Pyramid, in the Great Pyramid, there's the King's Chamber, and the King's Chamber is one third of the way down from the cap, from the capstone, where the capstone would have been. And that is the most energetic part of the pyramid. It's one third of the way down. So, yeah, if you were standing up, it would sort of be where the heart chakra would be if you were standing up inside a pyramid that came to the top of your head, you know?
Well, that
So,
makes sense.
and so inside the King's Chamber, and the inside the King's Chamber in Cheops in Cairo, it's made out of solid granite, silicon oxide, and all that pressure that all those other stones put on the silicon oxide, those granite stones, creates a piezoelectric effect, creates a kind of charge in the King's Chamber. And then inside the King's Chamber, there's the sarcophagus. There's the stone coffin-like thing, but you go in there and you meditate, you close your eyes, and you are transported. I was transported.
Really?
Oh my God, it was the highest I've ever been. Yes. Yeah, it's really a trip. And then I mean, of course, that pyramid's a little deactivated because the golden capstone that was originally on the Great Pyramid has been removed. So the true energy of that isn't what it used to be because they didn't want that power, at least, to fall into the wrong hands. But at that, when it was fully charged and fully activated, I think those pharaohs and those initiates that would lie in their sarcophagus would be able to travel to the stars that the pyramids was aligned to. And I think they would travel. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, it does actually. I mean, it's all coming together for me while you're talking. I'm picturing all this, and things are starting to make sense.
So there were great pyramids all over the planet. Actually, I was just listening to Coast to Coast the other day, and Linda Moulton Howe said they found a great pyramid up in Alaska underground that is still putting out energy, and supposedly the US government has access to that, and they're using it to generate energy up in Alaska near Mount McKinley.
Interesting.
I've never heard of that before, but if you go to Coast, if people want to hear about that and they go to Coast and look for Linda Moulton Howe's latest show, they can hear all about this great pyramid that still exists in Alaska. And it's sort of I mean, those megalithic sites are sort of a sub theme of your show because you also have Michael Tellinger there, which he found an old stone structure in, where was that, his place? Was it South Africa?
I think so, yes. That's where he's been. Yes, I believe
Right,
that's
and I'd
correct.
call that Adam's calendar. He found these old stone structures there that he says represents the height of another civilization, like before we were aware, before this civilization happened, which science historians say came out of Mesopotamia about 5,000 years ago. There was an older civilization, of course, the Atlanteans, which people say existed 20,000 years ago, Lemurians, which existed 50,000 years ago. So Michael Tellinger will be there talking about that civilization as well.
There will be him, and then there will also be Hugh Newman.
Hugh Newman, what does he talk about?
Well, he's going to be talking about earth grids and sacred patterns. He's researched the indigo child phenomenon, and he is an esoteric science researcher. So he organizes the Megalomathia conferences. You've heard of those before. I believe it's in England where that, or in the UK, I should be, to be more appropriate. And so this is what he is, this has been part of what he has been researching. And I've heard a little bit about, earth grids and energy grids. And they're really finding that, in fact, in Seattle, they're really finding that certain ley lines, if they build along these lines, can create a more spiritual feeling in that city, just from where those ley lines are created.
Well, I think a lot of cities are actually built on ley lines unknowingly. I think London
Well,
was a
yeah, in some ways, but he's thinking about, making it more conscious to do it that way instead of accidentally, to see if we can create a different consciousness amongst us.
Right. I think the great cities knew that. I think the ancient cities, I think they did know that, and we've forgotten that
Oh, sure.
with our modern cities. Although some people said Washington, D.C. is laid out along a kind of sacred geometry grid. And also, if you've ever been to Manhattan, that is aligned to the setting sun of the summer solstice. So you have,
Really? I
yes,
didn't know that.
the east-west streets have this great alignment. They call it the Manhattan Hinge. As the sun sets around the summer solstice, it sets due west. If you're standing on any street from First Street up to 200 something street, you can see the sun set due west. So, it's interesting. So there's a charge to this place. I'm in Manhattan now. There's a charge. And it is built on granite, so there's that too, the granite stone structures. But going along with these ancient civilizations, I know Brooke Agnew is going to be there.
Yes, he is. Brooks Agnew will be there.
And what's so amazing about him is he's going supposedly to the inner earth to discover these ancient civilizations. You know about the whole hollow earth theory?
I'm not familiar with that, not as
Oh,
much.
really? That's Brooks Agnew's whole, that's what I know him for. Well, supposedly there's openings at the North Pole and South Pole. So the Earth itself is like a hollowed out sphere. It's like there's a crust that's about 800 miles thick, but if you go due north, you start to travel into the interior. And as you travel into the interior, they call it the world of the smoky sun.
Oh.
There's a civilization. There's a whole planet, inner planet in there, inside the Earth. So in a way, it's like a shell. The Earth is a shell. So he's planning this voyage to the inner Earth, to the North Pole, because there's no land. There's only ice there, and the ice is sort of melting a lot in the summer. So, and I've heard other, and supposedly Admiral Byrd, I think in the 30s and 40s, flew in to the inner earth through the North Pole and discover the civilization there. And that's where the legend has it. But also there are some caves, Jules Verne's Journey to the Center of the Earth. Well, it's not just a myth or a story. There is a civilization there. There is, that's Brooks.
Oh, he there's a civilization in the middle of the earth.
Yes, inside the earth, they're still there. They
I
have,
wouldn't be surprised.
and I think a lot of the UFOs people see are probably about that civilization. And then also I see you have Peter Moon, who really, talk about time travel. He was the one of the people who initiated the Montauk experiment idea. You know about the Montauk experiment?
Yeah, I do, but I think from what I thought is it was a different gentleman
Oh,
that
me is
brought that
different.
forward, and Peter helped him write that book and
Right.
has been studying it.
It was this. It was someone else who brought it forward, but Peter produced the books. I think the guy who published those books, Al Bielek, was one of them. Preston Nichols was the guy. Does that sound familiar?
I believe that is the one I'm thinking of, is Preston Nichols, from
Preston
what I was
Nichols.
looking at.
Well, yeah. So Peter Moon met Preston Nichols, I think is how the story goes. and found out all about this time travel experiment that was related to the Philadelphia experiment in 1943, or this ship in the harbor there disappeared using Tesla technology and then appeared 40 years later at Montauk in this time loop. And that's what the Montauk books are about, and that's what Peter Moon's whole publishing company has been founded around. At least that's what I know of him. He's probably talking about other things, but this whole other aspect of time travel.
Yes, he did talk about that a little bit, and then some of the conspiracies around the discoveries around the Montauk, and then the Montauk projects, and
right.
Whatnot.
And the Philadelphia. Do you know about the Philadelphia experiment?
I am very, very vaguely familiar with that.
Well, that's what started off. Supposedly, Tesla, with his big Tesla coil generating a magnetic electromagnetic field, and Einstein and some of his theories created this warp in the field that made the ship called the Norfolk, which had this iron hull, disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And then it appeared again. And then supposedly, I mean, Preston Nichols was supposedly on the ship and he was, I don't know, caught in the hull there. I don't really.
Yeah, well, what he said is when it was almost like it took it apart by particles. And then when it came back, some of the men were actually embedded in parts of the ship.
And I think Preston Nichols was one of those men. And I think it was sort of a vision of that he had. I don't know actually how he got to where he is now in this lifetime, but it's so complicated. But it's just I'm excited Peter Moon's going to be there so he can maybe talk about that. And who else do you like that's, or who else is really interesting for you?
For me, because I'm into more of the spiritual consciousness in a little bit different vein, although I do love the crop circle, Suzanne Taylor will be there. And she's going to have her movie, What on Earth? And we're going to be viewing that, and she's going to do a question and answer period. She's going to be there, and she's very, very excited and has been studying these crop circles for quite some time.
I know. I know. I've studied crop circles, too, and I think Suzanne's movie is great. It's a great.
So you've seen it.
I've seen it. I know Suzanne. I helped her present it in New York here. It's a really well-done movie for opening awareness that these crop circles are really communication messages from another dimension. It's a really excellent movie, and she is very well spoken about the subject. And she, you know, she doesn't go out there on a limb and say who did this and this and this is what it's about. She presents the material very legitimately and says there is a mystery here. And
mm-hmm.
mystery is something beyond what we know to be true as far as science. There's something bigger going on here. And she keeps it very pure that way. She doesn't hypothesize about who, what. She just says, this is it. And it's nothing you can't explain. So that's what I like about her approach. I mean, I'm always trying to formulate my own opinions. And I talk about how crop circles are multidimensional tools for us understanding our own multidimensionality. So I take a little more chances with the crop circle. But I'm glad.
Well, I think it's a form of communication, honestly, because we, you know, to me, I almost think if someone, an extraterrestrial, if we think about the language in which they might even speak, it would be more in geometry and sacred symbols and them trying to somehow communicate and finding out what those shapes represent.
Well, geometry is the language of the universe. So those shapes are, my theory is they're connecting to deep archetypal symbols that are in our subconscious. So they're talking to us on a level that's pre-conscious or to our right brain, because our right brain recognizes shapes and patterns and our left brain is just linear. So they're symbols and communication devices of beings that are opening up new neuro net facilities to access more information. I say these formations are information, or our ability to take in patterns.
Right.
Do you get what I'm saying there?
Yeah, and I almost think that it also, when I think of it, because, to me, our souls are ancient as well, and we may recognize it on some level, some of those symbols. We may not necessarily know what we're recognizing, but somehow that it has some kind of resonation in our body, that somehow we're going to, if you see certain symbols that may create a feeling of warmth for you or a feeling of fear or whatnot. Symbols are hugely energetic in my mind. And our ancestors used those symbols for protection, for a lot of things. Now we've gotten away from that a little bit. In fact, in some cases, we've even bastardized some of those symbols. However, I think that that's what those crop circles represent to me, is that they're trying to get, like, create a recognition on some level to raise our awareness and consciousness.
Absolutely. I mean, everything is symbols. I interviewed Jordan Maxwell. Do you know who he is?
No, I'm not familiar with
He
Jordan.
just says the whole culture is embedded with symbols. Even the language we're using are symbol, our audio symbols to represent ideas. Everything around us is symbols, and it's impacting us all the time with thought structures. So what
Yes.
these crop circles are doing are giving more advanced thought structures to help open our brains to new possibilities, to more creativity, to solve the Earth's problems. Whether we're conscious of these symbols or not, I think they're embedded in the collective consciousness.
I absolutely agree with you. I think that that hits it right on the head with those.
Great. Now, what is I know the name Neil Free. What is his
Neil Freer, he's kind of come in at the last minute, and I'm not real. He's got something to do. He's connected to NASA somehow, and it was recommended by A.R. Bourdon, who's going to be there. You saw that as well,
Who's
correct?
that?
A.R. Bourdon or Borden. I thought it
Who's
was
that?
Bourdon.
And what does that person do?
He's with the Life Physics Group of California.
And what are they? Who are those?
Well, it's kind of hard to explain. They're very much into, I'd have to almost read a little bit more about the verbiage that they use in order for you to understand. But with Neil, he is going to be representing Sapiens Rising beyond the Babel factor. He does exponential evolution, the alien question, Zen and the Art of Spiritual Machine Maintenance, that he's going to be discussing all of that. He wrote the book Breaking the God Spell. Have you heard of that?
Oh, I would like, I should really be at this conference. I
I
love this
know you're
stuff.
going to learn. See,
I
this
know.
is more my area. This is where
I love
most
that
of my
stuff.
interest runs. I run more toward these kind of the spiritual consciousness, the changing of the DNA in our cells to raise our consciousness, and the use of to me, extraterrestrials trying to help us with
Yes,
that.
I'm totally into that. I mean, that's really, I do a lot of that on this program. I do a lot of extraterrestrial dialogues about our evolution because it's time we embrace the
Absolutely.
galaxy. So the presentation, I talk about how 2012 is really a gateway to a galactic community as we, as we come into that alignment and as we realize, if 2012 doesn't mean, and if nothing happens, what it does is reorientate us to a galactic awareness as opposed to a solar awareness. I mean, for so long, we've just been focused on our planets and our sun and thinking that's it. But suddenly, with 2012, the neighborhood's gotten bigger. We're not just living in a city, we're living in a state, in a country, on a whole different, exponential level of a community. And that's in a way like a Copernican revolution. It's like
Yeah.
with
Well, and
that.
I believe that a lot of the children that are coming in this generation, they're very different. Then, and I mean, I'm sure you would agree. I don't know how old you are, but I can tell you that from the generation that I came from, the children that I have raised, I've had three children, and the youngest one is completely, it's almost like he's in a whole separate paradigm structure than my other two.
What year was he born?
He was born in 1996.
Oh, and the others were
And,
born in the 80s?
at the end of the 80s, and I was born in the 60s. So, when I look at the two of the my older two and then my youngest one has been the most to me enigmatic, for a lack of a better word. And when he's the one that's kind of forced me to investigate metaphysics and the metaphysical, because I had a child that was very difficult to understand, and it almost seemed like he was inhuman to me.
This last one, and not from 96.
Right. The one from 96
He
is
felt
the
he
one I'm
was
talking about.
inhuman, like a different, a whole, he wasn't autistic though, although I think,
No, not at all.
yeah, he
And
was just,
because then I would have been able to label it, because at that time
right.
in my life I needed to label those things, and I couldn't. And there were people I would try to talk to about it, and I would be met with, well, skepticism to say the least. And sometimes they would, look at me like, well, I don't know what to tell you, with his behaviors. And when I started studying, what I've been studying is the fact that I don't believe that most of our souls come from this planet, that we all kind of come from a different dimension. And I learned this through hypnotherapy, and this has helped me understand my son even more, because I'm running into more and more people that, they're incarnating on this earth but aren't necessarily familiar with it and haven't always been here. And that is what reason I've kind of started studying. And then my extraterrestrial part of the whole thing is to wonder why, how are we connected? Or do we are they in another dimension only, or are they in another planet? What's the difference? Because they can communicate with us a lot different, and he seemed to communicate in the way that I would expect an extraterrestrial to communicate.
Your son create started, and how was that? Can you talk about that?
Well, I can, and I don't know, you may not find it unusual, but
No, I would find it unusual. Tell me, I'm very interested.
when he was little, he would display behaviors unusual for a baby. For instance, if he heard a loud noise, and most babies would cry and immediately. But he would, like, if he was standing, and I only can go from the time when he could stand up, he would stand up and then he would throw himself on the floor and look around. And then once he felt, it was almost like he was looking to see if he was safe, and then he would start crying.
Wow, it sounds like a post-traumatic stress, like he may be a reincarnation of some soldier or something.
That's how I started to study reincarnation as a result, because I thought, this is not normal behavior for a child.
But
And
you
then when,
weren't into any of this before you
no,
had this child.
no.
Wow, so he really opened a door for you, didn't he?
Well, yeah, because when you have a child like that and you want to understand their behavior, because you want to understand how to work with them. And he was sitting when he was 3 and 4 is when, because they say as they get older, they start to forget. And I don't know that they forget as much as they shut down, because they don't get, what they're sharing to them is very normal. But if other people are, if they say it to other people, like other adults, like I never shut him down, but however, we do have a family, he had school teachers, and then over time, kids just stop talking about it, and it's buried deeper and deeper as they go, but it doesn't change who they are, and they
That's
still have that struggle.
so what
And
do you think? Was he the reincarnation of some soldier, or was he
I do believe
extraterrestrial?
he was. I do, but here's what makes me think of the extraterrestrial part of it is when he was about 3, we were driving, and he says, my other mommy has white hair.
Wow, what is
And I said to him, I said, well, you don't have another mommy. And he said, yes, I have another mommy, and she has white hair, really long white hair.
Oh,
And my child wasn't someone that made, he did not make things up like that. And he would communicate about, like, I remember I knocked a wasp's nest out of a tree one time, and I came running in the house because I thought, oh my God, they're going to attack me. And I came running, and he goes, what's the matter? And I said, well, I knocked this wasp's nest out of the tree, and they're going to chase me. And he looked outside, and he goes, oh no. He said, they know you didn't do it on purpose. And when I looked out there was nothing. They just left the
but
nest.
who was this other mommy? Who's this other?
I could not get that out of him.
But has he talked about that since?
No. He is so funny. Now that he's 16 and a half, and he absolutely, when I did Reiki on him recently, he didn't like it. I don't know what happened, but
His energy
he
is
won't
too
allow it
high.
anymore.
It sounds like his energy, you don't want to lower his energy by your energy. I'm not saying your energy is low, but his energy may be beyond the Reiki energy.
That's exactly it. And he has said to me many times, and from my study of extraterrestrials coming in as walk-ins or incarnating on Earth, they have difficulty with emotions because most other dimensions don't have to deal with emotions.
Well, I think emotions are the beautiful part of this. I don't think
this is what helps us grow, but they're curious about it. But it is difficult. You know, emotions are probably the most difficult part. And he has said, I don't like emotions.
But
he says, I don't know what to do with them.
That was the problem with the Greys, the ET Greys. Mm-hmm. They bred emotion out of them and they realized they took a wrong turn. So they came back to genetically put emotions back into their genetic structure, their DNA. That you need emotions to get to God or to get to the
divine. To get to that center, that divine energy, that source.
You don't get there by pure intellect. That's a dead end. You need to feel the essence of life. And if you can't feel, there's no sense of the divine. So, I don't know. It's interesting what you're saying about this, your son, but I think the hybridization of the human and the ETs was to get that incredible intellect intertwined, keep that, but also bring the – not emotions as far as drama, but as emotions as far as feeling.
Yes, being able to feel. Feeling to feel that. Absolutely.
Love. If you can't feel, then you don't know what love is. And I think that is the next level of the galactic evolution we're involved in. You know, it's not just Earth and humans that are evolving. The whole thing, clockwork.
We're learning to work together. We're starting to – that's why I believe that extraterrestrials are incarnating on Earth, is to learn how to integrate these energies, that we all have these energies that we can share. And when you know – but imagine this, Alan. If you had – came from strictly an intellectual community or group or your makeup, and you walked into a body that had emotions, imagine how confusing and maybe even painful that would be initially.
Well, it's painful even if you're not an extraterrestrial. Emotions are
painful. Yeah, exactly.
But my theory, and this is what I would have talked about, is that we are evolving out of the lower painful emotions into a what I call a fifth dimensional reality, which is the higher emotions, the intuition, the empathy, the sensitivity. But, you know, those people that walked into those bodies to feel emotion, they did that because they're on a soul level. They wanted to feel what it was to be human. It was no mistake walking into those bodies.
No.
So
Mm-mm.
We're all
very intentional.
Yes. And it's okay. There's nothing wrong with feeling. It's what we're here to do. It's probably the only thing. I mean, all of the arts and creativity come out of that source of feeling. And that is the next level for humanity, to go beyond the drama of the lower emotions into the higher feeling, compassionate emotions that we have for each other. So I think the ETs are learning that too. That's what I'm saying. We're all in concert evolving together on the many levels of reality we all exist on.
Yes, I would absolutely agree with that. And I think it's fascinating. I think there's so much to learn and so much to get to know. And then, you know, when I was talking about A.R. Borden, he's also talking about certain hybrids that are built for high physical accomplishment.
Yes.
And how that's been, he's been studying that.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Anyone else? I mean, we can go on and on a little bit, but anyone else that really stands out for you at the conference?
I'm going to run through. Well, Mark and Andrea Pinkham. They were for the Gnostic Temple of the Temple or the Gnostic Group of the Templars.
Yeah, I've interviewed.
Are you familiar with them? You interviewed them. Okay.
I've interviewed Mark.
So you're familiar with that, the left-hand path.
And the worship of the goddess and all that. That is amazing. Who else is? I see Carrie Cassidy, who has.
She is going to be there,
yes. What is she talking about? Her whole Project Camelot?
Yes, her whole Project Camelot. She's going to have some surprise guests there.
Ooh.
So that's going to be interesting because we don't even know who
Maybe
they're going
I
to be.
I should go to the conference.
Say surprise and there you go.
Oh, I don't know. I really do. As I'm looking at it, it looks like a really, really fun thing.
I'm looking forward to it.
So the website, if people want to register for the conference, if they've been listening to this call, what would they do to register?
Well, they go to the PythagorasConferenceGlobal.com.
Uh-huh.
And they would go to registration. We have different ticket structures so that if they perhaps don't want to be there for the entire from the 10th to the 14th, we do have daily passes where they can buy a ticket to come for the day or come for 2 days. There's also a family ticket price if you want to bring the whole family, and there's also student prices. So there's a lot they can choose from in the registration. They would just need to click on the registration tab.
So the 10th, October 10th is, let's see, October 10th is, that's like a week from tomorrow, isn't it?
Yes, that's when I will be there on this Saturday. I will be going there to.
You'll be going on the 7th?
The 6th.
To set up. I see.
To start getting things in line. We want to make sure that everything goes smoothly.
I will show up there. I do have some time clear next weekend. Maybe you could fit me in as a speaker somewhere if I show up.
Well, we do have workshops. So, you know, that's something we call them breakout workshops. That's where, you know, we have the lectures where people are going to actually lecture. But, Alan, we also have workshops where people are going to be able to go and participate with the speakers and do some hands-on.
Okay.
We have Richard Sienna with meditation and chakras and also, one person that's going to be there virtually that I should mention probably is Joshua Shapiro is going to be there with the crystal skulls.
I just did a big crystal skull thing in New York last weekend. Oh, last year on 10-10-10, I had all the crystal skulls here in Manhattan.
Did you touch them? Did you get to feel the energy?
Not only touch them, but when you put these really ancient crystal skulls up to your third eye, what happened to me is like I felt my crown just pop open. It was like, boom, somebody.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like. I didn't expect it. It's like boom, like something just popped. It was just a very blissful experience too. It was very
wow. I would love. Well, he's going to be there virtually, so
he's
unfortunately
be there
I
virtually.
Won't be able to. Yeah, I would love to get my hands on at least one of those crystal skulls just to see. I love that.
But
feeling.
You know what? I'm organizing a trip. I'm doing something in Miami on 12/12/12. There'll be a lot of crystal skulls there. There's a crystal skull cruise. That people can look up at Oracle Stone Productions. And then there's a crystal skull tour of the Yucatan that I'll be posting on my website, newrealities.com. So if people want some time with crystal skulls, there's opportunities to have them. So
well, that would be wonderful.
Why don't you come
keep an eye on that?
Yes, I'll send you something about that. Just want to ask you, so the conference is going to be in Louisville, or where exactly is the conference?
It's going to be in Elizabeth, Indiana, which is right across the river from Louisville.
Okay, so if you fly into Louisville, how do you get to Elizabeth?
Well, if you're coming to the conference, we have, well, for the speakers, we have transportation, but there is transportation available from the airport to the venue, and that's how you would get there.
Okay, I get that. Well, if I decide to come, I will call you.
Yes.
I will call you and say, let's do it. No, no, it sounds good. Well, I'll talk to you anyway. But so as far as like for people who have been listening to this conversation, this is going to be a really breakthrough conference with many different angles of how to access new realities, higher dimensions. And
absolutely. So if you've ever – now see, what drew me was my curiosity. I may not know a lot about all these things, but boy, you know, if you interviewed me after the conference, it'll be a whole different story. I wanted to be where I could learn so much in one little setting.
Right. And Sandra Sabatini, what can you tell me about her?
This is Sandra's vision. This is what Sandra has put together. She is – as you know, the host of Otherworld Radio.
I don't really know. What is Otherworld Radio? No.
It's a radio show on Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.
And she's interviewed quite a few of these people. But I believe what Sandra wants to start us living from the heart, doing things from our heart and living from our heart. Mm. And she believes that bringing this knowledge forward for everyone was her way of creating a new paradigm and a unique way to put on a conference and have everybody there, but everything being done from the heart.
Mm.
And so
I
a lot
didn't
of
know
this,
that. Oh.
Yes, very much. Because if you think about it, if when you do something from the heart, it's so much more powerful than when you do it from your head or
Well,
when you do it from another motivation.
maybe I will be. It sounds beautiful. I didn't know that about this conference. That is great. Thank you for putting it in that way.
Yeah, she was very, this is how she is. When she talks to me about this, her passion is around humanity and wanting to live from the heart. That's where the passion is.
That's
That is where life is.
exactly my approach too. I'm sorry. Well, let me see. Now you're getting me very, very excited because
Yeah.
that
I
is
think, Ellen, I just don't know why you would hesitate. You
no,
just need to
because
come on down.
maybe I will. Maybe I'll just fly, see
You
what
know, maybe
they.
there's lots of people there that would love to meet you, and there's going to be a lot of people there that you would love to meet, obviously.
I know. Well, I'll call you about that and let you know.
Okay, absolutely. We hope you'll come.
Well, maybe I will. If I could do a workshop, possibly that might be worth it for me because I have a lot of PowerPoints planned.
Okay, well, what you would just need to do is just let me know what your subject would be, and I could talk to Sandra, and we could see what we could work out. I know that she would love to have you,
All right, let me
and
see about a plane flight and let me see about putting all that together.
you know it will be worth
Well, let me see if I can pull it all together. But
it.
anyone who's listening, I think should definitely be there, especially if you're in the area. Because
Yes.
and then that is PythagorasConferenceGlobal.com is the website for the Pythagoras Conference, Galactic Convergence 2012, Breakthroughs in Future Science and Spiritual Consciousness.
Yes,
So.
and it's exactly that.
Thank you, Laura. Any final words that you would like to leave people with?
Just that if you're curious, if you have something that you're drawn to, don't be afraid to investigate. Just go and learn. Learn as much as you can. There's no harm in learning. We are so that seems so caustic to us. And but it's not. Go out and just learn. And this conference is a perfect place for you to get your feet wet. If you are like me and don't know a whole lot about some of this stuff, it's a perfect place to get it all in one shot.
That is what's
A
beautiful
beautiful
about these
place.
conferences is they brings together knowledge so people can have a, it's like a college education, right here, one weekend, 4 days. You get a whole overview of metaphysics, spirituality, and future science. It's a huge education and it's very, very exciting. Thank you for doing it, for helping Sandra put this together.
Well, it's been my honor. It's been a learning experience. You know, this is going to be one of those things that I'm going to walk away from, and it will be an experience that I can't replace. I may never have one exactly like it again. So, you know, it's been an honor for me, and I've been honored that she has involved me so much, considering I don't have a lot of knowledge around a lot of this. She still just gets me to work, and we just go.
You have an intuition, and you're a beautiful spokesperson for this event. So, thank you for joining me on
Well,
New
thank you for
Reality.
inviting me.
That is the Pythagoras Conference, October 10th to the 14th, 2012, in Elizabeth, Indiana, right across from Louisville, Kentucky. Flying to Louisville and just get picked up and go over to the conference right there. Beautiful.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Lori. How do you say your last name again?
It's Woodmansey.
Lori Woodmansey, representative of the Pythagoras Conference, has been my guest. Thank you, Lori.
Thank you, Alan. It's been wonderful.
Yes. You really helped me understand some things too. I love the fact that your son got you into this.
I am too, actually.
Okay, and I'll be in touch. I'll let you know what's happening with me, okay?
Absolutely. Hope to see you.
Okay, thanks. This is Alan.
Bye-bye.
Bye. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. If you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com, or email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. Good night.